There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live local talk for the next couple hours. This show on till 1 o'clock today when the Scuttlebutt Radio Network takes over. And we are live at Ed's Seafood Shed right here on the Causeway. And lots to do. Guests this hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran will join us here in just a little bit. And I'll look up and we could talk some football, Nick. And we could also talk some, I mean, we hadn't talked since that football game. Just...
Yeah, that was a total domination.
Yeah, there you pull that mic a little bit closer to your. Yeah, there you go.
Total domination.
Yes, that was just to watch it through my eyes is one thing. To watch it through your eyes, Nick, was that? And we're going to get into talking about what's happened at the restaurant, but just for a second, as a man that's seen it from the inside, that football team.
Yeah,
and we're talking. If you're just joining us, talking Nick DeMario. Of course, we know him from Ed's and other restaurants, but I also know him from the football days. So
yeah, I practiced. My brother played.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable that they couldn't cover that one player. But I think the person that was under applauded was Mac Jones. He was lights out. Just razor. Tom Brady.
And you know, people say, "Well, look at him. He's not moving. He's not moving around the pocket. He doesn't hear footsteps or something, man. Because he stays there and puts the pass down." I was nervous for him, and he never.
I mean, that's the greatest offensive line that Alabama's ever had. And they look at all the awards. I mean, I think every award from the defensive back to all of the different positions, Alabama hit all the boxes.
Yeah, I think the water boy got an award too. On it.
Bobby Boucher.
Let's talk about what's going on at Ed's right now. And people come out for lunch today or this week or maybe for some breakfast. Let's talk about that as
Man,
well.
Ed's has just turned into this crazy monster beast.
Right.
All the hard work that Pete and I have done and the team, really, I mean, they've done over the last 3 years is just kind of creating the old Ed's, but the new Ed's, you know. From the outside covered seating to the extended outside cover seating coming this spring with music. And the 31-foot bar made out of an old bowling alley.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's an old bowling alley from Tuscaloosa. No slight of the Auburn folks. There wasn't any closed bowling alleys over there. But Bushwhackers have gone crazy. The adult milkshake is crazy over here. Last month we sold 1,000 of those Christmas Bushwhackers with the Little Debbie's cakes on it. And now we're going into Mardi Gras.
Yes.
So we've got the King Cake and we've got the moon pie. And
you're coordinated with another great local company. You got Cammy working with you.
Yeah, Cammy, we got her ice cream. Then we had her do a specialty ice cream to put in there. And it's just been really fun to watch all the different... Everything that we planned and set out to do, it's all happening at Ed's. And then, you know, I live in Gulf Shores. So, I'm a big Tacky Jack's breakfast person. And I said, man, we've got the, if not the better view.
Yes.
And I think we can cook... Maybe just a little better.
I would say.
So we started with breakfast and backed into it with Sunday and Saturday. Now it's every day, and it's just getting a little bit more busy and a little bit more busy.
Well, you got some folks that are coming and going, Nick, right here when it's breakfast time. So tell them, kind of give them the idea of the breakfast menu.
Breakfast goes anywhere from our version of chicken and waffles, which is beignets and waffles, to, Kaneka sausage and just... cornmeal pancakes. It's a cross between this old country breakfast and new time flavors, a little bit chefy.
Yes, chefy. I'm going to use that term.
A little chefy.
I like that. So open up what time for breakfast?
8:30.
8:30
to 10:30. It's a true breakfast. It's not the word brunch. We don't commingle eggs and shrimp. So but you know, it's super exciting to see all that's happening here. You know, with the outside seating, the open air seating is really cool because we've got heaters and we can draw those sides shut. And we got people sitting out there in January sitting on the patio, and we're all spaced out. And
yeah, we aren't.
We haven't really.
You got the space to space people out.
Yeah, and we didn't take advantage of, you know, they said where we can seat everybody together and put plexiglass. We're leaving everybody spaced and safe.
Very good.
And then we work hard at being good sanitary. We're already good sanitary folks in the restaurant business.
Yes.
We got checks and balances. But we continue to temp our employees. We sanitize all of our tables over and over and over, and we're just super excited about making new friends.
What a great view and a great place to come grab lunch or breakfast. We'll add that into the mix. But come see us right now for lunch. We'll be here throughout
adult
the afternoon.
And
adult milkshakes with a little touch of Mardi Gras there. Nick, thanks for having us out as always.
Thank you.
All right. We're coming back. More of Midday Mobile. Our guest this hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, joins us. It's your chance to ask the sheriff. I've got some questions for the sheriff, but you can always get yours answered as well when you ask them right here on Midday Mobile. And remember, Scuttlebutt Radio Network at 1.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile live at Ed's on the Causeway. Glad to have you along. Folks coming in getting some lunch. Maybe I can bring some lunch to go visit with my buddies at LCM. Let me check in with Larry Kirby at LCM and get an update on inventory. Hey, Larry.
Yeah, you bring lunch, you'll be a hero.
Okay, I can do that. And while we do it, we'll eat the lunch and we'll kind of take a tour of the inventory. Tell me what we're checking out.
All right, we got a great selection of trucks. We got a bunch of them on the ground, and we always got them coming daily. We got some more coming this afternoon and some later on this week. But we got a great selection. We got like 8 Silverados. We got GMC Sierras. We got Nissan Titans, Toyota Tacomas. We got Dodge Rams. We got Ford F-150s, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive. You name it, we got it.
All right, let's talk about how financing is looking here in the new year.
It's tremendous. The rates have not changed since last year. You know, we had some great rates all year last year, so they're keeping it up. Same options, same rates. And we're just able to help people save a lot of money and interest.
All right. Well, tell them how to find you at LCM.
Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. And look across the table from me here, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, my guest. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Sean.
Glad to have you here. I want to talk about this before we go any further because it's like a – well, I don't know if it's a moot point at this, but I know this is what every person in law enforcement has been asked over the last week. Leading into the inauguration today, we see that things in Washington were okay, at least the information
so far,
we've had now.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there was worry that there was going to be disruption places outside of the Capitol.
Yeah, and I think that was, you know, in the interest of being absolutely overly protective and all like that. Of course, there was different information put out that there were some trying to organize in all 50 states. I mean, there's a lot of frustration in this country, as you know.
Right.
And so there are still groups that are upset and mad and just want to protest. But I think that, you know, obviously in D.C. with such a show of force, it didn't happen. And many of the state capitals had a show of force. And I only expected any trouble, if it were to be any today, would be in the states that have already had, you know, a lot of trouble, you know.
Right.
Something like New York City has been rioting the last couple of nights.
Right.
And I don't think they've ever quit in Portland, Oregon, and places like that. But those are not so much anti-Biden people, just anti-government people and Black Lives Matter people.
So I wonder about that going forward, if we will see a change in how they deal with law enforcement in those cities. Because we looked at some of the statistics in those cities and how crime, I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise, but
yeah.
you pull the police back and crime goes up.
Yeah, we're seeing that across the country. In New York City, I think I saw the other day that homicides were up 40% over last year. They've lost 2,000 officers since last year to this year. They're leaving in droves because they don't don't have the support of the mayor up there, and they've defunded a lot of their agency stuff. They took off the street crime units they did away with several months ago, and that's what prevents crime, especially in a big urban city or big major city.
Right.
You see the same thing in Chicago. You see the same thing in Seattle and other cities where they just this anti-police rhetoric in what's it's just terrible, and it's hurting their own citizens, and citizens are dying.
Here, you and I have talked about this through the whole process,
yeah.
through this whole summer and everything. You and I have had regular, at least monthly, conversations
right.
about it, and it's not been the story here.
No. We've got good support from our people, and we, you know, people here are smart enough to know you don't defund the police or attack the police for what a small percentage of police officers may do somewhere else in the country or maybe occasionally a bad act here, but we deal with it.
Right. And I you know, one of the things that I think is important, people talk about community policing, and I don't know exactly what that term means, but the fact is in an area like our Mobile County or City of Mobile or even in Baldwin County, there's a better chance that there's some link between somebody in law enforcement and somebody in the community. There's just, you know what I'm saying, there's more, people know somebody.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I will tell you this, when I was elected sheriff, I found out quickly that the sheriff's office is already kind of a community-oriented policing because the sheriff is at the top, is elected by the people, you know, for the people, and he depends on being, or she depends on being in that office by right. the relationship he builds with the people, the trust he builds. And so I would say the sheriff's deputies know that, and there's a difference, and I realized that there was a difference between police officers working in a city versus sheriff's deputies working in a county.
They sat in clearly, their chairs, so you know, see that difference.
Exactly, and it was a huge difference. So that part of it was easy in the sheriff's office, but I will tell you this also, you know, the sheriff has about 5 appointments to make. And when I became sheriff, I told my top appointments that they were going to have to live in Mobile County. For that very reason, I want them to go to church, go shopping, maybe go to the ballparks and all in the same county in which they police, not, you know, pack up at the end of the day and run to Fairhope or somewhere
right.
and live over there and not get to hear the concerns that somebody may have. But now I've got these top managers that live all in Mobile County, and I think it's really paid off dividends.
And that really, I mean, that's beyond the X's and O's of law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, even though it's so important, it's not like that's something that you don't go to continuing training on. That's right. just being part of the community.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of my top chiefs may be in the grocery store or at the bank, and somebody sees him and knows him or her and saw something on the news that the sheriff's office may have been involved in. They say, hey, Ed, Dave, Chief, let me ask you about this. And he said, sure, let me explain it to you. Or, you know, things like that happen all the time.
How often has that happened on this show? When people have called us and had a question for you to ask the sheriff and they have heard some part of a story, and then you can fill in the blanks.
That's exactly right. And that's why I really enjoy coming on this show, because I'm able to put out good information and answer questions that I did not know were out there.
Mm-hmm.
They can find that out. And again, it's communicating with hearing from the citizens. Sometimes I've come off this show and said, hey, I got to get back to the office and figure this out or check mm-hmm. this out or make sure that all my people know this is what is going on.
And I want to let folks know, text line is open for you at 343-0106, and we'll talk with you. And Sheriff, so one of the things that from last time we talked, and I've been quoting our conversation some when talking about, because I've gotten calls from people that are in work release here,
mm-hmm.
and questions about COVID. I remember our conversation about, and I'm not turning over any rock that hadn't mm-hmm. been turned over before, about the state not taking, so explain to people too how at the jail that you have people that are going to be state prisoners, right?
Yeah. We hold prisoners until they go to trial and are found guilty or they plead guilty.
Okay.
And then we have to send a transcript to the state. Then the state is supposed to accept them as inmates. Well, when the COVID hit, the state prison commissioner just flat out said, we're not taking no more state inmates. So people that have been sentenced to maybe 10, 15, 20 years in a state penitentiary, they're sitting in our jail making time. And we're having to feed them, take care of them, and it causes us to be crowded in our jail. And get this, we've had to go pick inmates up to bring back to go to court here. And then when the court case is over, they won't let us bring them back.
Wait. You've taken them from
state penitentiary.
From prison, state mm-hmm. prison penitentiary, brought them to court, and then they can't return. Now they're in the jail.
Yeah, now they're in the jail. So me and the warden the other day discussed maybe we're not going to come pick any more up from them to bring back to court until they agree to swap some out with us.
How is it that, you talk about the COVID portion of this, how is it that there's any difference between what's going on in the penitentiary and what goes on in the jail?
There's really no difference. You separate people, you quarantine them, you test them when they come in. We test every inmate that comes in when they're arrested, and we have a pretty rapid test. It's not 100% accurate by no means, but occasionally we'll catch somebody with the COVID, and we know, don't send them back in general population. We then quarantine them for so many days, 10, 14 days. And we've been able to keep the stuff down. Yesterday morning, we only had, out of 1,400-something inmates, we only had 3 positive COVID yesterday morning.
Wonder what the ratio is at the if you look at all the prisons across the state and compare those with the jail on any given day.
Well, I don't know. You're
gonna say, I bet we're running count.
Like, yeah, I bet we're lower because I think we do a better job of managing it, obviously, because they're not managing it.
So it should be, they should be more willing to take people from the jail than you should be willing to take people
from them.
From the prison system.
Yeah.
That's something I want people to know. So that when we talk about the numbers at the jail, because you and I have talked about this over the years, numbers were up and then they were down and you were, and now they're up. But those aren't all, those are people, some percentage should be in the prison.
Yeah, a lot of them. I think it's 150 of them right now, somewhere around that.
And so 150?
Yes. And so it's growing because, of course, we're really being backlogged. So if somebody gets arrested, they're going to have a lot longer time sitting in the jail if they don't make bond before they ever go to court or go to trial.
We're not having jury trials right now.
Maybe 2 a week, and if one of them gets canceled, it's only 1 a week.
And the backlog, the last time I checked, was 6,500 or 6,000 plus.
Yeah, Ashley Rich has put some numbers out, but I can't recall. I see so many numbers, but it's really the backlog is climbing, and so I've thought about
this. Has to reach ahead at some point.
I think you'll see a lawsuit somewhere in the country. It won't be in Mobile, Alabama first, but we'll be monitoring and waiting for it to happen. There'll be somebody brings a speedy trial act or something like that. Right. I think the courts will be real lenient at first about, look, we understand that. We also have the COVID crisis, da-da-da-da-da. But at some point in time, somebody's going to say, okay, enough's enough. These people have a right to go to trial or have their cases.
And it's specific to county, right, whether they're having how many trials are had. Like out of the 67 counties in Alabama, it's different from Mobile County to Etowah County or Jefferson County to Limestone County.
I'll give you an example of how long it takes. You saw on the news yesterday, maybe a guy named Weaver was pled guilty to killing 2 people, and he pled guilty and took life. The murder happened, I think, in 2016 in McIntosh, or either 15. So he's been sitting in our jail for between 4 and 5 years.
Unbelievable. If you're just joining us, talking to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, your chance to ask the sheriff, too. You can hit us up on the text line at 343-0106. Yeah, and one of the questions I had, and I don't know how much from the work release side. Mm-hmm. So the work release facilities are run by ADOC? Okay.
The true work release centers. Now, we had our own work release program in Mobile County, but when the COVID hit, we had to shut it down. But we had as many as 60-something inmates in our jail that we're working on. And this was an interesting point. They couldn't get somebody to make their bond, but they'd go to work, and they'd make enough money working while in the jail program. Then they could go pay their own bond and get out. So that was helping them and us. And many of them to this day still have jobs that they got while doing it, but we had to shut it down.
So they can't go to the job now.
Right.
But somebody from another, somebody else can be in that job.
Yeah, right? That's right. But see, if they go out and bring the COVID back in the jail, we run the risk. So we really are very careful on people coming in and out of the jail, testing them and all like that.
Right.
So that's why we had to cancel it. We've talked about restarting, and then this second wave kind of hit us in the last month, hit us bad again. But I don't know when we can start it back up, but we'd like to.
It seems like in close, and I know it's not a complete closed system because people come and go, the people that aren't inmates, but it seems like if somewhere would achieve herd immunity for what that's worth, and I know there's been discussion about the vaccinations and where inmates fall on that, but if they get, it seems like you get herd immunity faster in a closed system than you would something open.
Obviously, but the interesting fact is we have a much lower rate of COVID in the jail than we do in the general population.
That's what I'm saying. So you might have
kind of keep that as a secure network, but
what do you think about vaccinating people in the jail?
Well, I think eventually.
Obviously. People that are COs and all that, but I'm talking about people that are inmates.
Well, there's just so many of them right now, as I said, over 1,400, and they don't meet the CDC guidelines quite yet, but eventually they'll do, and eventually when they have enough vaccines, we'll have a captured audience and be able to vaccinate, you know, 1,400 people at a lick maybe if they accept it.
That'll be a lot of vaccines. We're coming right back. More with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. We are live at Ed's Seafood Shed. Come visit us. Grab lunch with us. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It's my buddy Trey, and Trey's been doing great work for pushing like 13 years now in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Pretty good chance if I look over here at the Bayway, there's a chance a 1-800-GOT-JUNK truck is coming by. Hey, do like those folks and get that appointment set. If you're getting organized in 2021, like I always say, my pro tip, easier to organize, fewer things. Get rid of that junk and get it gone with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You can do your appointment online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or just pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll work with you to find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you, and then they show up. They quote your price. If you say yes, they get the work done. And that could be the giant trampoline in the backyard. It could be the stuff up in the attic that you want to get rid of. It could be a storage unit you want to empty, or a house you're getting ready to sell. You've got junk. You want it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and you need somebody like my friend Trey that's been doing it and making people happy for years, over a decade. How about that? A decade plus. Check them out online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or just pick up the phone, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, and it's your chance to ask the sheriff. And I saw this one here, text coming in here to 343-0106. Buddy said, Schillinger Road between Cottage Hill and Three Notch has become a drag strip. There have been three deaths in the past year. I have only seen an occasional state trooper pull someone over. No city or sheriff's department. Meanwhile, cars are running, continuing to run 80 to 100 miles an hour through that stretch. Holy cow.
That's a big stretch.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that roadway. I travel it sometimes. As far as the sheriff's office, we don't run a traffic division and generally don't work traffic. It's up to the troopers or the city police, although we do have a special grant given to us through traffic safety division of the state, and we do have occasionally some deputies that can work traffic in that case. And you know, hearing that, I may see if I can't assign them out there, do a little bit there, but really it's responsibility of the state, and the city has jurisdiction in that area as well.
So that's in the PJ.
It's in the PJ.
And also, as we look at, this is just kind of a civics thing, and we look at the city, okay, so here's municipality, and then we have this thing for police jurisdiction, but
yes.
You get outside of that, how does the sheriff's department and the state troopers, where do they, like, who does what?
We answer all types of criminal complaints.
Okay.
You know, any kind of investigation, and the state handles any type of traffic-related accidents, speeding, things of that nature. Now, in some rural areas where the sheriffs don't have as many people as somebody like us, the state's ABI, their detective division, may work some crimes. But the sheriff has the jurisdiction in the unincorporated areas and would be the first responder.
Okay. But so there is, I mean, it's a coordinated, like, y'all take this part and then state troopers take this part.
That's correct.
Is there,
and now we assist them if we, you know,
sure,
we oftentimes
work together, but
come,
I mean,
upon a deadly wreck or something, and we'll assist them with traffic for, you know, number of
sure.
hours.
But you, sure, you wouldn't not do, but there's a basic understanding of what each department does.
Exactly. And our officers are not, our deputies are not trained to investigate traffic accident reports other than very minimal in the academies or something. But if they go to a deputy sheriff academy, they may not even get any training on completing the accident report.
Is it different? So I'm looking at text people here. Is it, because people need to understand, sheriff's departments are different in all 67 counties. Do other counties have where their sheriff's department do traffic?
Very, very few, if any.
Okay. And by traffic, once again, I mean, even though we see if you have to have things shut down or rerouted,
yeah,
you see sheriffs doing it, but not speeding tickets and fender benders and those kind of things.
That's right. And see, another reason, rationale, of course, I don't, you know, I think public safety, you know, beats everything, but if sheriff writes a ticket to somebody, the county, or the, you know, gets nothing out of it, you know, for the expenses involved and all like that, or even the equipment that you have to have to write tickets if you do the e-citations and stuff like that. You know, the city gets money from the fines, and the state gets money from the fines, and the county gets nothing, not the county. So, you know.
Hey, and as we're having a little bit of a, and I want to get to some of these texts here, a little civics lessons, how is Sheriff's Department funded?
Through the county commission. We get our budget from the county commission. They appropriate it, money to, by law, they're required to fund the jail and to fund reasonably to the county sheriff's office.
And fund the jail when this goes right back to the situation where the state, even though I guess you get the money, will the state pay you for, I mean, not saying it's right, but will the state pay you for the people they're not taking into the prison system?
No, they don't. But just recently, because of the CARES Act, they did get some
That's
money
a racket.
And agreed to us beginning March of this year. For a few months, they were paying us $28 for those inmates that should be in the state prison.
Because CARES Act money.
Yeah, because it's CARES Act.
But without CARES Act money.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I think Senator Albritton is perhaps going to sponsor a bill to require the state to pay the counties for these prisoners until this situation can get worked out. But we've been complaining. The County Commission Association across the entire state has been complaining. But so far, we've not gotten any relief from the Department of Corrections.
I mean, it may be done for reasons of COVID or whatever, but I could sit here, and I don't know what's in the mind of people at ADOC, but I could say, hey, if I've got Sheriff Cochran in Mobile County keeping these prisoners that should be up here, a lot cheaper for me to leave them there, but that doesn't make it right.
Yeah. And there's another thing they call the dips and the dunks. That's where a probation officer can put somebody in temporarily, and it's supposed to be limited how many days, but they don't get a court hearing to get out before the maximum days they're supposed to be able to be put in. But we can't let them out until they go to court or go to the penitentiary.
And we realize from just our conversations in the past, people aren't going to court real fast right now.
No, they're not.
Norm says, what is the status of the fire and police changes in West Mobile? Haven't heard anything in a while. That's Norm in West Mobile.
That issue is sort of sitting dormant right now. The city has not made any movement on pulling in their jurisdiction. And so we're sort of at a standstill. I think that, you know, that was driven from fire protection and or police protection. You know, and it's still a matter of someone in West Mobile wants to annex into the Mobile. But, mm-hmm. but you know, three council members wouldn't allow them to do that.
Yep, and that's all it took because it is, you know.
The supermajority. You have to have five votes to do anything.
And so that area still. So, I mean, because that was, I think people and like Norm and others will hear, like, y'all talked about that a whole bunch and that it seems to go back burner, but it's just that there's no resolution right now, right? There's no way to resolve this.
That's right. I think a lot of things have been put on the back burner with the coronavirus. You know, government's even, most of government shut down for several months, you know, with the stay-at-home orders and stuff like that. The government employees are working from home and stuff like that, so not a lot was getting done, you know.
And it's eventually that's going to, I mean, looking at the jury trial, and I know that's not, you know, y'all feed into it, y'all aren't dealing with it, but it is, I don't know how you work through that backlog. Is, I mean, once we go even back to, hope, knock on wood, you see me knocking on this wood table here at Ed's, if we go back to full jury trials, how do you, because there's new stuff happening all the time, and you've got a 6,500 case backlog.
Well, I've got my solution, but the DA's office can't get involved in this, and I hadn't reached out to the public defender's office, but I'd like for them to tell all these the people in jail that are being, you know, represented by public defenders, say, hey, dude, you might want to consider making a deal, because at the rate we're going, you won't go to trial for 4 years from now, and you're going to be sitting here for 4 years. And 95% of the cases, 90% of the cases, resolved through a plea deal anyhow.
Yeah,
and they might want to reassess their situation the deal.
But don't you think defense attorneys are telling them, why plead on this? Because it could go on. You're not going to get, you go to trial for, you know, if somebody can bond out, you know what I'm saying? That,
yeah, if they can, you know, that bond out. But those that can't bond out,
right,
and there are a lot of them that can't, and that's why there's so many there, they're just waiting to go to trial, waiting for their court date. But it's going to be a long time coming.
This is, I mean, like you said, I don't think it happens here, but this has got to be brought as a lawsuit for people not getting a speedy trial.
Yeah, sooner or later, it's going to blow up. Everywhere, because we're not the only ones that have this problem.
Right, and it is, yeah, we have our own issues in Mobile County, but mm-hmm. there are other counties in the state and other counties across the country that are dealing with the same thing, maybe at a bigger level than we are.
I would think so.
All right. I want to talk about a subject that seems to be ubiquitous when you and I talk, and that's concealed carry permits and all that. You talk about the numbers. The fact that you can't find a box of 22 rimfire or a 270 round, you know, deer hunting round. What are you seeing for? And while I'm quoting rifles there, obviously I'm saying you can't find handgun ammunition is scarcer than hen's teeth right now. That tells me that people are stockpiling that, but they're probably buying firearms as well, right?
And I read a statistic 2 days ago in 2020, 64% more firearms were sold in the United States than in 2019. 64%.
64%.
Yeah, and I apologize to the people applying for pistol permits right now. We're overran with so many applications.
This is my guess. Now I'm getting confirmation.
We one night 2 weeks ago, you can initially apply online or something and then get your application. We had 291 applications in one night.
In one night.
I can't remember. That might have been the night after the election, but I'm not sure. But I think we're doing 5,000 a month or something like that. That this new one's coming in or something, and we're at the highest level.
Is that a combination of renewals and new ones, or is that?
Well, bear in mind that some are last up to four years,
right.
5 year term, and so a lot of those don't have to come back in, but the 1, 2, 3 year terms,
right?
Repeat,
that's what I'm saying. I'm trying for the total number you've got, whatever the renewals are for that year on top of the new applications.
No, I think the new applications over what we exist in are between 4,000 and 5,000 a month new.
Y'all should see me trying to pick my jaw up off the table.
Yeah, it's just I thought
new,
everybody
you, new yeah, we, unique yeah, applicants.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting our
wow.
Yeah, it's just, it's blown through the roof, and every time something like a major occurrence, a shooting or something like that occurs,
those numbers
jump up.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. We are live at Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. Love for you to come on and check it out. And coming up in just a little bit, Scuttlebutt Radio Network.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Ed's Seafood Shed. And continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Do that in just a minute. Right now I want to check in with Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry and advice as well. I think you ought to add that somewhere. And great advice on the store name.
I might have to make new signs, right, Sean? How you doing today?
I'm doing good. And what's shaking at the shop? What are y'all up to?
Man, we are jumping. Been really busy. I know we've talked about the prices of gold and silver being up. A lot of people are sort of nervous and jumping in on the investing side. We've had a lot of folks look at the fact that gold and silver right now is up from where it was a year or two ago, and they've brought stuff in for us to go ahead and purchase. So we've had a really busy morning. You'll have to check out the pictures on Facebook.
All right, and let's talk about that, too. Online, y'all have – what's your total up to? I mean, it's a whole bunch, but you probably have the number of items that y'all have posted online.
Last time I looked, it was over 11,000 unique, unusual items there online, everything from jewelry to rare and collectible coins. That doesn't even count all the gold and silver bullion that we have available in the shop that's not online. So if you want to shop safely from home, mobilebaycoins.com, click on that shopping button, browse a little bit. Then come to the shop right here in Midtown, pick up your items, and check out some of the other cool stuff we've got here.
Good stuff, Angelo. We appreciate it. And remind folks, in the real world, you said in Midtown, exactly where do they find you?
2204, right between Whataburger and Little Flower Catholic School.
There you go. That's some language I can speak. I appreciate it. Thanks, Angelo.
See you, buddy.
All right. Continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. I've got... got a lot of questions coming in here. This one went when deputies work for churches, and they said officers, so I don't know if he's asking about police officers or sheriffs, but said when the officers work for churches on Sundays, so I'm going to insert their deputies as well, how and who pays them? That question from Bill.
The churches pay them directly.
Okay.
Anytime you see like an extra job, the person that hires them pays them directly.
And they said, also, what would happen if that officer, or let me insert deputy there too, wrecks or is involved in an accident while doing this while in a police or sheriff's vehicle?
Well, that's one of the benefits that they have working for us is they can drive the vehicle to and from extra jobs. Our stance is that when someone is paying for police protection, they're contributing to the overall public safety for all of us, because that officer can take actions or deputy can take actions to or from or while on that. And one of the most prime examples I can tell you, a case I remember very fondly, was a robbery murder case out at I-65 and Airport Boulevard several years ago at an Italian restaurant. And one of our officers was working an extra job at the Ramada Inn, and about 5 hours later, he sees this guy stepping out of the woods into the parking lot of Ramada Inn and arrested him. He was one of the shooters, or was the shooter, of the double homicide. And I remember as a lieutenant going to the homicide scene and stepping over two dead bodies in the office, so it sticks well with me.
This question here is my pistol permit still good if I move to Georgia for 15 months and then move back? I have not gotten my Alabama license switched from Georgia yet. Also, I do have a pistol permit in Georgia.
The law requires you to have, in Alabama, requires you to have a pistol permit from the out of the county in which you live or reside. Now, you don't have to have a driver's license to do it. You can have, you know, utility bills or something like that to prove your residency. But Georgia accepts our pistol permits there, and we accept Georgia's pistol permits here. So I think he's in pretty good shape, but he should, when he has time, get it for the county in which he lives.
You know, there somebody's asking questions here about the buyback on modern sporting rifles. Maybe some of the conversations I've had about what the Biden gun plan has been. President Biden now, I guess officially today, has some plans. The buyback, I saw more of a reclassification.
Yeah, I think the reclassification is what you need to be looking out for. There's a lot of discussion on chat lines and stuff like that about how they're going to try to reclassify, and, you know, some of your, whether it's a short barrel rifle or not a short barrel rifle, you know, with the arm brace and stuff. You know, the people that bought the bump stocks, they got kind of screwed over because they had to turn them in, and they didn't get compensated for them. And
they became, that was my problem, Chair, and I talked about it, and it was kind of crickets back then.
Yeah.
I keep bringing this up because I didn't have, had very few people concerned with it back then. But the way that worked is those bump stocks were then, it's not that they quit selling them and they were grandfathered in, something that people had in their homes after a certain date became illegal.
That's right. And if you got caught with it, you could be charged. That same thing happened with, you know, automatic guns back in the 70s, I think, when they outlawed them or something like that. You had to either get it registered or you had to surrender it.
Yeah, and the registration thing that comes back to these modern sporting rifles or semi-automatic rifles, that in the plan that I've read through, and I was reading it back in, since it was announced, maybe October or so, that plan, it was to put these semi-automatic rifles under the same tax stamp as short barrel rifles, fully automatic weapons, suppressors, those kind of things. Right.
Mm-hmm, that's right. It sort of prices people out of the firearms. You know, is what the intent what some of their intent would be. Put it under the license, then pass something, make the license go up.
Yeah. So then it's also something you've explained about, because I call them concealed carry permits. People call them pistol permits, but people always come to me and say, "Oh, well, you know, I got to go down there and register my serial number." So no, you don't. That pistol permit is for you, not for a handgun, not for.
That is correct. Back in the 60s, 50s, and I think it ended in the 70s, at the time they used to ask for the serial number off the weapon for the pistol permit. And I mean, that was obviously over-regulated. It didn't make sense. It took a while to figure it out, I guess. But that hasn't been in effect for at least 35, 40 years, I think, now.
Yeah, in my lifetime, if I may or may not have had
that pistol permit, you could have seven pistols, and I've seen people be able to hide that many on their body before. That one permit would cover all seven of them.
And it travels with the
person.
Citizen,
yes.
Not with the. So that was one of the ideas with, if these come under the tax stamp, these semi-automatic rifles, then you're going to have to, if you do them tax stamp, it's going to be like a suppressor or short barrel rifle or a fully automatic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have that serial number, your name, your fingerprint, everything
right.
Tied to it.
That's right.
Here's a question. This is how inside this show gets. Is there a place in Mobile for a retired law enforcement officer to get their annual, and you'll know it, LEOSA, Law Enforcement Officer SA, LEOSA qualification?
Mm-hmm.
What is that, by the way? Educate me. What is
a federal law was passed, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, and that's the initials for it, where if you're a retired police officer or federal agent or law enforcement officer, as long as you qualify once a year, you can carry a concealed permit anywhere, I mean, concealed carry pistol anywhere in 50 states. Federal law allows you to do that, and it trumps any kind of state law, but you have to have qualified once a year annually. So for former Mobile police officers, deputy sheriffs, they come to our range and we can certify them. And okay. I know the FBI locally, they certify some of their agents because the joint range that we have is owned by City of Mobile, Mobile County, and the FBI. We partnered at that 20 years ago, I guess.
So that hopefully answers that question. Now we got about 2 minutes left.
Sure. Okay.
First of all,
2 minutes.
Yeah, I just want to, number one, what are y'all going to do with the extra time with no Mardi Gras?
Well, it's been interesting not having Mardi Gras because I've always been involved in a lot of other things. Maybe take a trip or something. Mm-hmm. I'm myself thinking about, you know.
It's a strange thing, huh?
It is to all of a sudden this time of the year. But, it's been, in some ways, it's been nice. But I've been in Mardi Gras for my entire life. I'm a kid coming up in a family that participated in Mardi Gras and organizations and participate now. And then, of course, working it for so many years. But, it was the right thing to do to cancel it. And some people drug it out, and you knew what was going to happen. I mean, early on, and I come out and said, look, we're not participating because I didn't want my guys to be caught up and wrapped up doing all this planning and wasting their time when the obvious was obvious to me. So I said, look, we're not doing it. And so my guys moved on and fortunately, there's a number of extra jobs out there for them to work.
They're earning a lot of money in
extra jobs. Some people had asked me, what about they're not making the overtime? Because that's a big thing for them. But there are so many extra jobs with construction and just other things this day and age. You know, people still appreciate police around here.
That's a good thing. And we appreciate you doing the show with us.
Thank you. It's very beneficial.
Remind folks, too, they want to get y'all online.
They can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We have a website, mobileso.com. You can download all kinds of information, and we have tip lines, and you have an app on the phone. You can download our app, Team Sheriff. Check out who's in jail. Give us crime tips, and watch out for these catalytic converter thieves.
Yeah, no joke. You talked about that last time. It's been everything in the news.
We've arrested a lot of people, but you can see where I was raising Cain about it. It just suddenly took off, and we're trying to knock a dent into them.
There we go. Sheriff, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sean, and all your listeners.
Scuttlebutt Radio Network on the way next. We are live at Ed's.